second for, I guess it's 2013. I don't know. I don't normally look at, you know, calendars. This is the show about stuff that interests me. I'm Morps, and tonight we have Big Brother, BSV, Swap Potato, and RU486, who is slowly developing tinnitus. I've got the last of my bottle of Eagle Rare here to finish off. What are you guys drinking?
I'm drinking a Manhattan with some Jim Beam.
Nice. I get a full-size coffee cup filled with a brimmed with espresso. You think I'm bullshitting, don't you?
No. You're on a different time zone. That's entirely plausible. I just find it amusing. We're all getting hammered. You're getting wired.
Could explain why I'm not sleeping well. Shouldn't be having this
large amounts of caffeine.
What are you drinking, BSV?
Water.
I'm
not drinking water.
Dangerously.
What am I drinking, fluoride. That big?
2-drink minimum. Remember?
And you never said it was alcoholic.
What do you got, big?
Pop off. The shittiest rot gut vodka.
Aw, yeah.
Whether you're cleaning the floor or cleaning out your system.
Who can tell?
So, anyways, I thought I'd have a little bit of fun on the to open up the discussion tonight. I thought I'd talk about kind of what a shadow network is and set, you know, how you go about setting these things up. I guess to give a quick little definition, a shadow network is kind of a network in a network, or it's, you know, a network in the shadow of another network. Generally, when you got a botnet or a backdoor or, you know, some other form of under proper channels access to a system. You know, a botnet CNC channel is actually a pretty good analogy for this. Tor could be a good a good system for this. Hell, even a VPN, if somebody doesn't know about it, could be something like this. But when I was passing out the show notes before the show, RU kind of jumped my case on this a little bit. So, what were you thinking, man?
I don't know, man. Like, this audience is probably okay, but I recommend this sort of discussion with those outside of the community not to take place, because it goes the little adage of just because you can doesn't mean you won't, or telling people or teaching people how to do this doesn't mean they're going to use it responsibly, Morps. You know?
Well, I wasn't really going to go... I'm not wanting to do a hardcore digital dojo segment. I'm wanting to kind of just discuss the existence of this stuff and concepts, you know? Kind of have a more general talk about it. Not so much, like, you know, here's the software package you need to use, and this is the config file. I don't want to go into that. Mainly because it makes a really boring radio. But, you know, that'd be more of a dojo thing. And actually, I was talking with Laura earlier, and I am working on a little bit different, more comprehensive digital dojo. Maybe not next week, maybe a week after that, because I've got quite a bit of testing to do yet. But so it might this could relate to that a little bit. But so I'm not, you know, I'm wanting to more talk ideas. You know what I mean? So.
Yep.
You know, I'll be honest, if somebody really wants to figure out how to set up a backdoor in a system that they can get access to, Google exists. I mean, you know, they can go on SecurityTube and watch how-to videos all day long on how to do the stupid-ass script kiddie shit. I mean, you know, you just if somebody's going to be malicious, a lack of knowledge in this day and age is generally not going to stop them, because they can just get online and learn how to do it real quick. They may not understand what they're doing, but they can at least learn what buttons to press to kind of get them a response.
Yeah, so, yeah, I see what you mean.
So personally, I'd rather at least talk about it and be open about some of these concepts, because then if nothing else, you know, people are aware of it. And if somebody listening to this is the type that they're going to want to try this stuff out and go cause havoc, malicious problems, and, you know, whatever... Well, they probably are going to find a way to do that anyways. So, you know, it's just
enough.
A question of you know, maybe they can get some concepts down and at least do it in a way that's not going to cause such a headache for a network admin. I can't tell you how much fun it is tracking down some jack-off running Cain and Abel, not having a fucking clue what they're doing. Like, I'll just route all of your traffic through my little laptop here. Oh, why are things on fire?
I like fire. Easy to cook steak. Me, man. Me like meat.
Yeah, we always cook our steaks over burning laptops here.
Don't you?
It's that good plastic flavoring.
No, nothing says, medium rare like heatsink medium rare.
Oh, yeah. You guys are making me hungry.
You know, I should tell a story. I have actually cooked a hot dog on a processor.
Bam.
Tasty.
I helped a friend of mine build his first machine years ago, the K2 300 megahertz, AMD K2. Pentium 1 era machine, right? So he ordered all of his parts online on his old machine, and they all showed up. Great. So he asked me to come over, and we're gonna build his computer. So we get to work on that. And this processor didn't come with a heatsink because, you know, he just ordered a processor, you know, an OEM unit. And so he thought it didn't need one.
Uh-oh.
Oh.
So I don't get over there until pretty late in the evening. And by the time we start putting everything together, it's like, dude, where's your heatsink? Well, it didn't come with one. Well, okay, fine. Where's your heatsink? It didn't need one. It didn't come with one. No, it needs one. So,
wow.
He didn't think it was going to get hot enough to need a heatsink because it didn't come with one. So he burnt his finger on the damn thing. And I'm like, go get a hot dog. I got an idea. So we went and got a little piece of hot dog and cooked a little hot dog on the damn thing.
Wow.
It actually didn't taste that great. But that we actually phase changed, cooled it for the rest of the evening till the stores opened up and he could go get a processor the next morning, or a heatsink the next morning. And by phase change cooled it, we took two empty cans of Dr. Pepper, filled them with water, and, you know, one went on the processor and one went in the freezer. And every time we swapped the can, grabbed the wash rag and made sure there wasn't any condensation before putting it down. And
that is truly ghetto and frightening.
And it worked great. We had his machine. He was playing Final Fantasy VII on that machine, phase change cooling it by swapping Coke cans as they got hot.
Here's That's the last, awesome. Last of the V8 Interceptors. Morps, go forward. You're now the Road Warrior. That's truly epic, man.
So, back to this. How did we get there? Oh, right. Dumbass can enable. If you don't know what a tool does, don't use it. Seriously. Can enable works by spoofing your ARP packets to your switch and routing all the traffic that goes through that switch through your laptop. Generally, it's mirroring it. But this can create all kinds of routing havoc in that switch. And so the switch, if it's of size, will probably go down because it's trying to copy everything over, so it creates a massive amount of CPU load on it. And if the switch is already running near capacity, yeah, it's going to go down. But also, too, your laptop generally can't handle that kind of traffic coming in because, if you're running Canonable, you're running Windows. And Windows is not designed to be a router. At least not for any level of traffic. And I know you can get into some hardcore server configs and hop into the registry and adjust, you know, frame size and shit like that. But, you know, your average script kiddie's not even going to think about that kind of stuff. So, and hell, XP, I think, had a limit of, like, what, 30 connections or some silly thing like that. So, I mean, you could really knock out a network with kind of stuff.
I'd hate to see some stupid kid. Like, who's a stupid kid now, you know, 15, 16, just because he's got the knowledge and can get pwned for the rest of his life because he, you know, tried one too many things.
Well, you know, generally, if you're going to do this kind of shit, go down to Starbucks or, you know, someplace else where the worst that happens is they yell at you and ask you to never leave and never come back.
Never leave.
Yeah, never leave. and you know, whatever. But it, better yet, don't get caught. So that's kind of the idea of setting up some of these shadow networks, is not getting caught. So
you're gonna make the best parent ever.
Little Bobby tables.
What's this child's middle name? That's actually sequel code, and we're gonna see what happens. Let's see here.
All right, so, son, here's a bottle of whatever. Just don't get caught drink driving. That's all daddy cares about.
It's not a crime till you get caught. Now, anyways, so pretty much when you think of like a you know, this shadow kind of infrastructure, there's two different things we're generally talking about. The first one is usually some kind of a pwned machine. You know, it's a web server out there that you were able to get code to run on somebody's client. This is what botnets are. It's where they write a piece of malware and, you know, a virus, and take over as many machines as they can and send them all back to one central point of command and control. And that's what a botnet is it's a whole bunch of machines that you can give instructions to remotely, with the concept being that those machines will do the attack as opposed to you, so you won't get caught. For whatever it is you're doing, you know, if you're just sending spam or attacking other machines, whatever. So that's what a botnet is. It's just on a big scale. What I'm talking about is a much smaller scale, you know, having a handful of systems that you have access to that you can bounce your traffic through for any reason, whether you're doing something malicious or just exploring. So, and generally exploring... a lot of times exploring is just as illegal as being malicious, whether you have, you know, doing any harm or not. So just something to keep in mind there. So there are reasons to want to do this, and if you don't know what they are, you're just not very creative. So
I'd argue that exploring computer networks died with the BBS.
No, I wouldn't say that. I would say it's gotten a little bit harder since the days of the BBS, unless, you know, somebody's got open Wi-Fi around you, because now you pretty much have to pwn a machine and pivot around it. But that's actually not that hard. So, you know, of course, the first thing that comes to mind is pwning somebody else's box, right? So this can be as complicated as writing out some crazy-ass piece of malware and distributing pirated copies of Windows with this already pre-installed and... You know, seeing how many machines show up and where, and setting up a massive command and control infrastructure and all this happy horse, you know, getting all Metasploit Ninja on somebody, and, you know, or it can be calling up old people and pretending you're Microsoft and asking them to go to a website and run a piece of software.
Well, you're doing it the hard way, guys.
Yeah.
Go down to Best Buy for $20, get 51 gig USB drives, put your stuff on that. Go to local high school, throw around the place everywhere. Guarantee you have a botnet by the end of the day. Because they've all got laptops, man.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I mean, but I'm not even talking about building a botnet. I'm talking about getting just a handful of machines to bounce in and out of, right? So another good idea here is messing with somebody where you work. Like, you know, say you share an office with somebody, or, you know, the guy in the cube next to you. Or even better, somebody you don't particularly like. You know, find a reason to get them away from their computer for 30 minutes, 10 minutes, however long it takes you. Hell, get a little teensy and put the script in that thing so it just runs and drops your agent payload, whatever you want to call it, onto their box. And, you know, you can bounce everything through that and make it look like them, especially if it's somebody you don't like, right? So there's that. And... But the other way to do this is to actually legitimately acquire a machine. You know, go buy an old used laptop or get a Raspi or mod a router and just go hide it somewhere. Like I mentioned the Starbucks Wi-Fi network earlier. If you take a Raspberry Pi and, I don't know, hide it inside of a larger power strip with a Wi-Fi dongle on it and a little bit of pre-set up code on the thing so that when it's turned on, it connects to the Wi-Fi and beacons out somehow so that you can connect to it later, and it's a power strip, so you just leave it there and people are going to use it and probably not unplug it, especially if you can find something like, say, a lamp or a copier to just put that thing in, you know, in the circuit of. and nobody will mess with it. And now you've got a machine hidden on a network somewhere that you can get at that nobody else is going to mess with. You know, and there's people have done tricks like this all the time, right? You know, you take an old laptop that you don't care if you don't get it back, do the same kind of setup, right? And, you know, find a network you can connect it to and duct tape it under a table somewhere. Yeah, you'd be surprised how often this shit actually happens. If you have a smaller router, like a TP-Link, one of those tiny little routers, if you go to a lot of universities, they have these floor coffins where all the power cords and the Ethernet lines for their computer labs go. So if you go into one of their labs, you can start checking all the power plugs and find one that's unoccupied and just find a place to stuff the router, you know, have it all set up. And a lot of times they'll even have Ethernet right there for you next to it. So you can, you know, set up your own little pre-poned box. You know, it's just something to bounce off of and just leave it somewhere so that you've still got a way to get back at it from the Internet. And now you can pivot through that thing, go on out on the Internet and go about your day. So, you know, all of these are absolutely viable methods, and you will never find all the ones I've hidden around. Anyways. What? No, nobody's going to respond to that?
No, because we know it's true.
Well, those things aren't expensive. A little TP-Link 703, I think it is, the WRN 703, the thing's like $20. So they're, you flash them, it's got Wi-Fi in it, it's got an Ethernet port in it, you can do all kinds of crazy-ass shit with that. And, you know, there's all kinds of write-ups out there on doing this kind of stuff. So if you're defending a network, you really want to run some kind of NAC or login system, or at least audit the devices on your network every once in a while and see just how many of these damn things you find.
And if you're attacking a network, ignore what he's just previously said.
Oh, no, if you're attacking a network, you want to find, you know, you don't want them looking for these things. So you know, that's the other thing, too, is you don't want to make so much traffic with the thing, you know, you don't want to, you know, disrupt the network so much that they go looking for what's causing the problem. I'm generally talking a way to pivot out in and out of a network just to, you know, mask what you're doing. Not so much, you know, I guess you could attack that network, but, you know, if you start giving somebody a reason to look for your little Dropbox somewhere, then, well, they're going to start looking for it, and there's a chance they could find the thing. I mean, I guess if you've got it disguised as the potted plant and only using the Wi-Fi network, you just got to hope nobody ever asks why that potted plant is plugged into the wall or has a solar panel on it or something. I actually have...
It's a solar-powered plant. Why else?
No, yeah, a solar-powered plant, right? I mean, it makes perfect sense. But plants are solar-powered, right? But in all seriousness, I put new lighting on my lawn a couple of weeks ago, and actually I hit one of the freaking lawnmower, but I've got all the old ones, which are these little solar powered things. You know, they got the little solar panel on top and they got the little LED in them, and I just liked them because you didn't have to wire anything, so you just, you know, drop them and go, and they charge a little cell, and then they run the LED at night to light up your sidewalk and shit, right? And Walmart sells them, they're $1 a piece, shit like that. Well, if you look at one of these things, they've got a couple of essentially AA batteries in the thing that they charge with the solar cell during the day, and then at night it runs an LED. Well, if you gang up five or six of these things, and I've got a stack of them, I'm going to rip apart and get out the multimeter meter and see how much voltage I can actually pull off these things, because I want to see if I can take one of these TP-Links, put it in a weatherproof Tupperware with the solar panel on it, and go throw it on somebody's roof and have, you know.
Wow, no, that's not a bad idea, man.
And just have a little access point somewhere that I can use from the internet.
But really, if you could do something like that, you know, it'd be really worth looking into some sort of mesh network. You know, that's super low cost to put something like that together. You could easily throw out a grid of those.
Oh, sure. Sure, if you want to take this in a much less malicious route. I mean, I enjoy talking about this kind of stuff. Not that I've done a lot of it, that I'll admit to.
Well, there's nothing you'd really... Well, it's something you want to set up if you're going to do something that you may need to, say, access stuff without footprints, right?
Or in my case, actually, in all honesty, it's testing. I'm doing it to see if anybody else notices that I'm doing it on the network I'm supposed to be securing. And I'm just looking to see how obvious is it that this stuff is there if you're not looking for it. And I'll give you a hint. On a network of size, not very.
You're the worst boss ever. Your employees actually have to do their work. You're a tester.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, now that I've kind of got the concept out there, if you're going to throw one of these things out there, how do you actually get back at it, right? Because generally they're going to be behind a firewall, especially on Wi-Fi. You're probably not going to get a public IP. So, you know, you'll probably be on some restricted guest network, right? So,
yep.
This is where go ahead, Ari.
You're going to go fishing for it.
Well, that's one thing you could do. If this is where profiling your target network comes in really handy. Before you go leaving a Dropbox somewhere, you know, pull out your laptop and see what kind of open Wi-Fi they have so that you can kind of plan ahead. For example, if you know that you're going to get a public IP and there's not much of a firewall in the way, then, you know, set up a Dyn DNS account. And that way you can just SSH into the thing after the fact. And just don't put SSH on a different port so it doesn't get, you know, hammered to death by bots trying to crack your passwords, which you want to have some fun. Set up a honeypot, watch port 22, and just look at the amazing amount of passwords you can collect in a couple of days. You know, people are scanning the internet for all kinds of shit daily. And yeah, so if you're using common services, don't put them on common ports. Just a little tip. So now, Tor has a facility for setting up the onion addresses, the .onion addresses. So you could feasibly set up one of those for your device. And this might be a little bit of work to, you know, you might have to manually manage the device a little bit before you leave. That way it can get the thing set up and you've got a way of accessing it through Tor. And that way you can get at the thing and it beacons out through the firewall because it's connecting back out to the onion routers, right? So that way you've got an encrypted tunnel to get at the thing. You could, of course, you know, SSH or a VPN or, you know, whatever of your common connections. But if those are blocked or if you don't have a way of knowing what its IP is, you know, after the fact. The one that Iron Geek likes is I2P. And if you ever go look at his Slartivasts, back throws is what he calls them. But he's got a word for that, and I don't actually know how to say it. I think I've linked to it before in a Digital Dojo. He talks about setting up, actually, I think one of those TP links and a Raspi, now that I think about it. He talks about setting those up pretty much for this thing and using I2P, which is an alternative to Tor, for beaconing out. That way he's got a full write-up on those. Those are pretty good, actually, if you want to see how to do it with I2P. So, you know, if you don't want to go through any of that, but you know you're going to get, say, a public IP, you could set up a Twitter account, just have the damn thing tweet the IP address or PM it to you on, you know, whatever social network is your fancy, or on a forum somewhere. You know, hell, go for the old school botnet style and have it connect up to an IRC channel. There's all kinds of ways to do this. It's a question of creativity and what's open. So, you know, hell, you could have it do something as innocuous as, you know, if you wanted to get really fancy, go set up a web server somewhere and set up an image that isn't linked anywhere, like, you know, 1x1 pixel, whatever, right? And then just watch the request logs and, you know, have your little throw boxes, or, you know, if you're taking over somebody else's machine, whatever, you know, whatever you're using to get back into your control channel, have it request an image so you can, you know, see the IP it's coming from. That way you know where it is.
I'm making all weird sort of facial expressions here and agreeing and sort of, I don't think it translates well over the internet.
It may not. But I'm really just kind of throwing ideas out there and wanting to see what you guys think of them. So,
not something I've actually thought about doing.
Yes, ditto.
And considering I'm internationally traveling this year, I've been trying to limit some of the douchebaggery things I do online.
Well, I'm talking about in terms of testing and just, you know, shit that I think would be fun to do. So I guess, you know, if you wanted to slap the whole "this is for educational use only" label on that whole conversation, go right ahead. But I'm just throwing ideas out. Really.
Yeah, no, granted, man, it's a great idea. I hadn't actually thought about setting something up like that, where you could have like a ring around your house of beacons.
Well, if you got four or five of the things and you're doing something, maybe you're testing a network, maybe you're just trying to get around a firewall from work. Like maybe they've got a real restrictive network at work and you just want to check your email. So having a system that you can bounce out of somewhere, and it's not your standard cable modem out there somewhere, or you know your home IP that your IT guys know about, then maybe you got a way to bounce out and go, you know, do what you want, and they're not quite so sure what it is because you're using an encrypted channel and, you know, whatever. I mean, it's there's lots of reasons to do this kind of stuff. Hell, it's a way to host content without getting caught, right? Because these are machines out there on the internet, especially with the Tor and the dying DNS setups. I you know, if you found a network out there with enough bandwidth, you could run a torrent seed box and just hide it on somebody else's network.
Nice.
So, and you know, I guess if you've got delusions of, you know, you're in some V for Vendetta bullshit or, you know, whatever, you think you've got some secret documents you have to share, you know, that could be a way, you know, I guess if you've got the Anon mask on and you've got to get the docs on whoever out there, that could be a way to do it as well, right? You got some little router somewhere that's actually running a web server. And before you think I'm nuts talking about these things running a web server, that's what most of them use for their config files. Or that's how you configure them, is through a little web server. So you swap out the config page for just whatever docs you're trying to host on a rooted router. And actually, you know, I didn't even think of it till just now. Old Android phones would probably be fantastic for this. They got a battery in them. They got a couple of different ways of connecting at to the internet. You could duct tape one of those things under a table and nobody'd ever even know it's there.
Yeah.
Now that's some James Bond shit right there, man.
And there's already off-the-shelf solar chargers for devices like that.
Oh, yeah. Well, hell, if you could hide the charger somewhere where nobody's going to notice it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, again, the whole power strip idea. Hide it in an extension cord and just leave it somewhere because you know it's going to get plugged in and used. And then, you know, hey, run a web server off a phone somewhere and yeah, basically just steal somebody else's internet connection so you don't get caught, right?
Nobody steals internet.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I have fun thinking about these kind of things. And then now flip it on its head. How would you catch somebody doing something like that?
Reading a lot of logs.
Yeah. You're right. Read your logs, audit your network. That's the only way to catch it.
Yep.
And apparently you categorize your power strips.
Occasionally look for potted plants with the, you know, the charger or with the power cord going to them, or, you know, for some reason a cell phone charger is going to the underside of a table somewhere.
Great, getting more paranoid than I am.
I was thinking about it, you know, if some of the Starbucks I've been to, you know, they've got these big padded chairs with the cushions and they're right next to an outlet so that you can easily plug in your laptop, and a couple of them have several outlets around them. It'd probably be cake to hide like an Android phone down under the cushion and run the cord to it and just, you know, hell, let people sit on it. Who cares?
it's only going to be throwaway tech anyway, so got to be stuff you're willing to lose.
Oh yeah, don't go leaving absolutely right. Don't go leaving a Raspi or a cell phone around somewhere and then expect to get it back. The whole point is you're using it for plausible deniability. So if if somebody finds the thing, you want it to crack and just be done.
Also, too, make sure it's tech you've bought secondhand with cash, because you don't want serial numbers coming back to bite you on the ass.
Just sure. Peel a sticker off.
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea. Strip it out of its original casing. That way they can't even tell what the hell the thing is.
Yeah. It's scary. It had wires.
We thought it was a bomb.
Yeah, they'd probably blow it up before they found it. No, seriously, man. I'm that paranoid. Yeah, I wouldn't go using it.
take the Starbucks chair out there. It had wires coming out of it, so they take the Starbucks chair out there and blow it up.
I could see that happening, man. Out of Boston and everything like that. Some dude sits up.
Boy, just hide it in a box with something that ticks.
And labeled not a bomb. That really convinced them.
No, you want to leave the box labeled not a bomb in the elevator? let's go ahead and get into stories here, because this is going to get even sillier quick. The first story up is from Ars Technica. Mozilla has sent a cease and desist letter to a company that sells spyware allegedly disguised as Firefox browser to governments. The action follows a report by Citizen Lab, which identifies 36 countries, including the U.S., hosting command and control servers for FinFisher, a type of surveillance software. Also known as FinSpy, the software is sold by UK-based Gamma International, there's a business name, to governments, which it uses in criminal investigations and allegedly for spying on dissidents. Mozilla revealed yesterday in its blog that it has sent the cease and desist letter to Gamma demanding that these illegal practices stop immediately. Gamma's software is designed to trick people into thinking it's Mozilla Firefox, Mozilla noted. Mozilla declined to provide a copy of the cease and desist letter to Ars. The spyware doesn't infect Firefox itself, so a victim's browser isn't at risk. But the spyware uses our brand and trademarks to lie and mislead as one of its methods for avoiding detection and deletion, and is used by Gamma's customers to violate citizens' human rights and online privacy. So, this FinFisher has been masquerading as all kinds of things. So I guess this is where that whole, check the MD5, hash sum on your software is probably kind of important. But I just like how they're going the legal route of trademark infringement on Firefox to try to stop this spyware.
Yeah. Even before the MD5 checksum, it's really just a matter of only download from the website from the actual company. You know, always check that address bar. Just pay attention to where you're at when you're getting a download.
Yep. Yep, absolutely. So, this next one I have is, I think it's kind of interesting. It's from kitguru.net. It didn't take long, but the high-profile Google Glass has already been jailbroken. Infamous Android and iOS hacker Jay Freeman, also known as Saruk, has told the community that he has rooted his Google Glass headset. He shared a picture online showing his jailbroken device. Additionally, he published a detailed online report of how the exploit was achieved, and this guy's blog, he's got a really long write-up of what he did. This means that other people can copy the procedure to jailbreak theirs if they want to. He also highlighted how poor the security on the device is. ZDNet writer Jason Perlow spoke to Freeman and said, as Freeman explained to me during a phone interview, although there is no recording indicator per se, if you are being recorded, it's readily apparent from video activity being reflected off the wearer's eye prism that something is going on, particularly if you're in close proximity to the person. But that can be changed once the Glass headset is rooted. This Glass is an Android device and runs on an ARM-based Linux kernel, and can use Android user space programs and custom libraries, any savvy developer can create code that modifies the default behavior in such a way that recording can occur with no display activity showing in the eye prism whatsoever. So what he's done is he's gotten in and he started mucking around with the software in Google Glass, and he's made it so he can record people without giving it away. And he can change the voice commands to things that, you know, you wouldn't really suspect are actually voice commands. And, they've completely rooted Google Glass, which is not surprising. It's just that they're completely broken out of the restraints Google placed on them. And now they can literally do whatever they want with the thing.
Yeah, you know, like, I don't like how they're portraying this in a negative light. It's like, oh, well, now they can do these horrible things that can invade your privacy. But really, it's just like, oh, okay, Google? Cool. They've rooted it. Now they have more control over it. That's awesome. Like, that's all I see there. It's like, oh, okay, great. Now the user has more control over their device.
Yeah, they can turn off that whole upload the images you take, you know, the pictures you take to Google immediately thing. And
why would you want to do that? Google won't do anything bad with that.
What was that phrase? Only do evil? No, that wasn't it.
Yeah, I think that was it.
Yeah, they had some logo. I don't know.
Do no evil unless it infringes on profits.
I like that one.
Okay, so I got a Bitcoin story up. So this next one's from PC Gamer. Multiplayer esports network ESA was found to have malware in its anti-cheat client, which it uses, which used users' graphics cards to mine for bitcoins. Information about the exploit was posted to ESA's forums by user Enjoy ESA Sheep, who found he had been unwittingly farming bitcoins for somebody in the community after noticing excessively high idle GPU usage. The mining is legitimate and deliberately system-intensive process of adding transaction records to Bitcoin's public ledger, generating Bitcoins for the miner in the process. The ESA client had been pooling the GPUs of users in order to generate money for wallets held by ESA staff. The ESA co-founder, Eric Ipkane Thunberg, responded to the accusation, initially claiming it was mistakenly released April Fool's joke. So the co-founder was like, just kidding. And then they put out the official statement a little bit later when they figured out they weren't just kidding. He admits that they were testing Bitcoin integration to determine whether it was a feature we might want to add in the future. Ultimately, Torbal says they decided against it. He claims that an employee who is involved in the test has been using the test code for his own personal gain since April 13th of this year. The owners and management of ESA all apologize to each of you that were impacted by the recent events and intend to make things right, Torbal continues. ESA has issued a free month of ESA premium to all of our community members who enrolled in premium for the month of April. We also ask anyone who has experienced any physical damage to their computers to open an ESA support ticket. So yeah, kids, you know, if you want to blow up your graphics card and get a new one. In an effort to maintain complete transparency, we have released all of the Bitcoin wallet addresses as well as data dumps of the wallets themselves. The value of the mined Bitcoins was $3,713.55, and ESA will be donating 100% of the earnings to the American Cancer Society. ESA will also match 100% of this amount for a total of $7,427.10 donated. ESA also is increasing the Season 14 League pot prize prize pot by the $3,713.55.
They really like that number.
Yes, they do. So, this is awesome. We all were waiting for the botnet to start mining bitcoins, but it turned out it was something integrated into this ESA anti-cheating client, which kind of makes sense because that means gamers are going to be running it, and gamers are the ones with the high power graphics cards.
No, this is kind of a stupid idea. A gamer's favorite pastime besides playing a video game is benchmarking their CPU. As soon as they noticed something was awry, they would have started messing around. No, gamers are the wrong people to target for this. You gotta target, like, grandma and grandpa. You know, they're rich, their kids bought them a computer that's real nice, and they use it just to browse Facebook.
Yeah, no, that could be. But I was waiting on it. I was just waiting on, you know, a hardcore botnet that just goes nuts in Bitcoin mining, because it seemed like such an obvious thing. And I just love how that made nearly $4,000 in half a month just by pooling all these people's graphics cards.
Now, was it just running while they were playing games or all the time?
I don't know. It doesn't go into that much detail.
It would probably stop running while they were playing games, so it wouldn't be detectable. A miner running on a system is going to be pretty
resource heavy.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, people
like
have gotten
you're doing
raided.
That, you really can't do anything else.
People have gotten raided by drug enforcement because they thought they, you know, started a grow op because all the power consumption for doing Bitcoin mining. So, well, I don't know. Go ahead, Swaff.
I was just going to say, Yeah, it's really at the point now where just like an individual can't just like go fire up their individual computer and make any decent amount of bitcoins. You just have to run it as a business now. So you're going to be using lots of power.
Yeah, it hasn't been practical for a very long time to do your own Bitcoin mining. But I just got such a kick out of this story. And apparently it was first discovered and posted to their forums, and their company staff was like, no. And they didn't believe them, so they started collecting all this evidence on Reddit. And it's pretty fun reading if you go check out some of the individual threads on this thing.
I love how they publicly denied it, then had to go, oh, well, rogue guy. But it's okay, we made a lot of money out of it, but we're going to give it to cancer. Children's cancer, so we look like a nice company. God damn it, these people annoy me.
Yeah, that's your standard PR move of, you know, make a big donation to a charity, don't sue us, don't sue us, don't sue us.
Crap, man. Like, I don't care if children have got cancer, give me my goddamn money back. You know? Give me something free. Damn the kids with cancer. Look at that PR crap. Oh, it's okay, you know, like, we stole heaps of money, but we're gonna give, like, one third of it to cancer kids.
Did they really steal any money, though? They just mined it.
They tried to, and they got caught by the community.
Exactly,
but they'd still be going today, performing this illegal action behind people's backs. You know, they're not paying any price for what they actually did.
It's not like they actually stole the money from the people, though.
Still a point.
Well, I'm sure their power bill went up.
Yeah, they misrepresented what they were doing.
Oh, no doubt. I'm not arguing that. It's just I don't think they actually stole anything. They did a dick move.
You could argue they stole computing resources and time. It's certainly a violation of the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act.
But it's okay. We broke a federal law, but we're going to give money to cancer. And now we're looking like a nice corporate responsible people we are, even though we lied to our consumers and the people that we're meant to put trust in. And no one's going to jail. And they're not going to lose face because they gave money to children from cancer. No way, man. Everyone should cancel their subscription to this account and tell them to piss off. That's what the community should do. Because then they first denied it, like douchebags. And then when they finally got caught, because the community kept hammering them over something they knew was true, but the company was denying it, they threw their hands up in the air and had to say, yes, but we're going to give kids for cancer, so stay with us. We're a nice corporate. Look at us.
I think you just like saying cancer.
Cancer. No, man, dump your account. Get away from them. They're crap. Find someone who's got some ethics.
I honestly had no clue who they were before this story.
Me neither.
So I don't follow this esports crap because it's not a sport. It's a game of skill. Wait, that came out wrong. Video games are not athletic.
You want to bet? It takes months and years of training to sit in this chair for this long every day and play this much Minecraft. This is a goddamn sport, my friend.
You're still nowhere near the League of the Koreans, man.
No way. You know, I'm not even half the level of a 12-year-old Korean girl.
Right. They're bred for it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Koreans are the Olympic end of the spectrum.
You're born in Korea.
Correct.
They remove your legs, they just put like some folding wheels on there. Congratulations, you're now a seat permanently in front of a PC.
Well, there was that champion StarCraft player who said he slept with weights on his hands to be better at, you know, getting his actions per minute up or whatever it was.
Wow.
Generally, when I think of when you say the phrase esports, the first thing that comes to mind is some dude bro playing Madden on an Xbox, so it's just like, really? I really don't care.
Bro Madden, bro!
Yeah.
New Madden, bro. Let's go play New Madden.
You wouldn't tell a chess master that he doesn't play a sport, would you?
Yes? Chess isn't a sport?
I bet.
I think it is.
I think it is. You gotta train for that stuff, man.
You do.
That's a game of wits. That's not a... Well... I don't
that's
know,
what sport
it,
is, man. is just tuning your body to do it something better, but you still got to have it upstairs to understand how it works.
I'm not going to argue with you on this because it's just a definition thing that irks me. That's all. It's not even a definition thing. It's a implication thing. Anyways, I don't want to dance around language all night. I don't know. I've never heard of somebody getting tackled over chess, but I mean,
man, me and my brothers,
we played jumping the table and taking a chair to their opponent.
Oh, you wouldn't play at my house with my brothers and me playing ice hockey. Man, we lost teeth, not to pucks, flying remotes. Bullshit.
Some of the Magic the Gathering tournaments I went to got pretty violent.
You can't play that card, that's illegal. Fuck you and your mother.
And then shit just went down.
And then you got cards out.
Yeah, and then we got the cards out.
Come on, man, everyone's seen that one guy who's just a little bit too wired at a tournament. You know, he's been going since 7 a.m. that morning from a 3-week bender the night before. 3-week bender the night before, that doesn't make sense, but moving right along. You know, it's just a little bit too much coffee and then just flips his shit when it doesn't go his way. I love those guys.
I just like that he's had enough caffeine to have 3 weeks in one night.
What? Huh? I've just finished my coffee. I can see colors.
I can see colors too.
Mine are wiggling on the wall.
Those aren't colors. Those are... Anyways.
Oh god, there's spiders! It's multicolored spiders!
Oh wait, he's in Australia. That could be a problem.
And we never heard from RU again.
Alright, next story up. This one's from H Online. And looking at the time, I'm really glad the digital dojo I have isn't going to take long to cover. Financial news service Bloomberg reports that the Chinese hackers have been spying on U.S. government contractors who are involved in the manufacturing of military equipment such as spy satellites, bomb disposal robots, and combat helicopters. Bloomberg says that an analysis carried out by at QIntelQ, QIntelQ. What, were like all the regular names taken? Is this like a fancy way to get a domain name? Anyways, I think they were trying to make a smiley out of their name. You know, those little ASCII art things, looks like an ass or, you know, eyes opened up or something. It provides an idea of the scope and the continuity of a cyber espionage, or of the cyber espionage that has been targeted at the U.S. Wow, that is actually hard to read. According to Bloomberg,
like it's poorly written.
Yeah. According to Bloomberg, two former Pentagon officials said that almost all major U.S. defense contractors have fallen victim to Chinese hacker attacks. Apparently, the attackers gained access to U.S. government's most closely guarded technological secrets, which could allow conclusions to be drawn about military campaigns as well as attack and defense strategies. In 2007 and 8 alone, the Pentagon reportedly briefed 30 U.S. government contractors about these aggressive spying efforts. Bloomberg said that it was unknown whether QIntelQ had also received such a briefing. Since at least 2007, that company, has repeatedly had its systems checked due to suspected spying activities. Terramark, the company that carried out the analysis, found that every last corner of QIntelQ's business divisions had been spied on for at least 3 years.
Awesome.
That's pretty bad. They've been in your network for 3 years and nobody noticed. There's virtually no place we looked where we didn't find them. Terramark's report was this. They're like cockroaches, them Chinese.
Turn the lights on.
I'm going to stop reading this because we all know this. This is bullshit. You know, of course, yes, hackers are in networks. The reason I wanted to highlight this story is just the amount of bullshit in it. You know what I mean? It's just like, come on.
Oh, yeah.
It's old news and it's hyperbole and it's written up to look like this new major thing of, you know, they were in your system for 3 years and nobody noticed. That doesn't mean the Chinese hackers are really good. That just means you guys suck.
No.
We're good, first world. We stop all Asian attack. Hang on, wrong voice. Sorry.
But you know, this is the one that they caught. Just imagine how many other systems have been compromised for that long, and nobody's even known.
If this is any indicator, all of them.
Yeah.
So what's your old network defense strategy? Well, Bob over there looks at the printout of the logs coming off the AS-400 every once in a while. Bob, who's Bob? Bob's the guy who died of a heart attack 3 years ago.
He is a net security practice for if you're dealing with government designs and all that. Don't attach it to the internet.
Ding, 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 ding. We have a winner.
Well, BSB, here's your complimentary degree.
Yay. Why is it made out of chocolate?
It's a government.
You might want to refrigerate that. Wow.
Oh, God.
These stories. You're only going to see more of them as time goes past. You know.
I know. It's so much bullshit. And I guess now what this story really is some military unit out there is trying to get more funding. So they've got this news agency to hype them up. So let's see. Next story up. This one's from Time.com. A Boy and His Atom is less than 90 seconds long. It doesn't have much of a plot or any big laughs, and the animation is rudimentary. It's monochromatic, blocky, and generally reminiscent of graphics programmed on a Radio Shack TRS-80 in 1978, only not quite as fancy. And yet, IBM's new cartoon is remarkable. It was produced at IBM Research Almaden Research Center in Northern California, by a bunch of scientists who used a scanning tunnel microscope as their animation tool. The pixels are individual atoms nudged into place to form a picture. The Guinness folks have certified this as the smallest movie ever made. And they mean smallest as in size-wise, not shortest. IBM has been playing around with individual atoms for a long time. Two of its Zurich-based researchers invented the scanning tunnel microscope in 1981 and won the Nobel Prize in Physics for it in 1986. The company Silicon Valley Lab, where the hard disk was born in 1956, used the microscope to explore future storage technologies. By using a tiny magnet, it's shown that it's possible to store one bit of information using 12 atoms versus the 1 million atoms a hard drive needs to do the job today. That discovery could eventually lead to digital storage that crams radically more data into far less space than any existing. Okay, I'm going to stop with the thing. What they've done is IBM took snapshots of atoms that they were moving around to make little pixels and made a little 90 second film of a little stick figure bouncing an atom. The cool part here is they are manipulating atoms well enough to draw a little picture and make a 90 second film, and they figured out it takes 12 atoms to store a bit.
Meh.
That's cool. Meh?
Meh? It's cool and all.
No, but you know what? I think they'll probably end up coming up with a way to store a bit with less than 12 atoms.
Well, it's going to say.
If they run WinZip on their Word files first. Yeah.
I mean, I can't see any practical application yet.
Well, yeah. Well, no, there's definitely going to be practical application. It's just going to take a while for us to get there.
Yeah.
They're manipulating atoms well enough to draw little pictures. That's
badass. Yeah,
that's a couple of steps away from a replicator, dude. I mean,
mm-hmm. Tell me when we're one step closer. You know, one step away from a replicator, then maybe.
All right. Well, how about my next story here? Then,
tell me when we actually have one.
Since this is a little bit closer to. Well, this one's actually a little bit closer to Terminator, but you know, I gotta have my mind-bending story to close out the current events in, right? So this one is from diginfo.tv, or diginfo.tv, D-I-G-I-N-F-O, yeah. A group at the Tokyo Institute of Technology, led by Dr. Osamu Hasegawa, has succeeded in making further advances with Sonin, their machine learning algorithm, which can now use the internet to learn how to perform new tricks. So they've got a machine learning algorithm that they have taught to use the internet.
Skynet's gonna look a whole lot more scarier now.
Image searching technology is quite practical now. So by linking our algorithm to that, we've enabled the system to identify which characteristics are important by itself and to remember what kind of thing the subject is. These are pictures of rickshaws taken in India by the group. When one of the pictures is loaded, the system hasn't yet learned what it is, so it recognizes the subject as a car, which is already learned. The system is then given the keyword rickshaw. From the internet, the system picks out the main characteristics of pictures related to rickshaws and learns by itself what a rickshaw is. After learning, even if a different picture of a rickshaw is loaded, the system recognizes it as a rickshaw. So, yeah. In other news, the Japanese have a machine learning algorithm that apparently is, you know, pretty good, and they've just taught it to learn from the internet. So,
I hope this.
Just imagine Skynet now. You know, you got the robots marching down Main Street, but instead of saying, like, Terminator, just sitting there silently, they're all screaming, "Faggot! Faggot!" Because they found 4chan.
You're a ma!
They could find Reddit and all just be obsessed with cats.
Just as long as there are no goatsy robots.
Oh.
That's the front line, man.
This is going to be the first ever recorded machine to terminate itself. It is going to hit certain websites out there and just go, nah. And you built me, and this is what you create. Nah, I ain't living anymore. Shut down.
In all seriousness, they're talking about using it to make it look and recognize things like knives and pins and pointed objects and stuff like that. But I want to see what happens when you say, look at this face. That's Bob. Not the Bob that died of a heart attack at the factory over there, but this is Bob. Now, look at this other picture. Is that also Bob? And start getting facial recognition software going on with this thing. Because, yeah, there's going to be a lot of applications for this that these guys aren't really thinking of at the moment. So.
Cool.
But yeah, the Japanese have a machine learning algorithm that can recognize things and is learning from the internet.
Yeah.
This will end well.
Yeah, if you did future news on your show, I'd go, that's your first machine to solve Terminate right there.
What? Don't you want your killer robot to recognize your face before it kills you?
No.
No, BSV, you have it wrong. I want my killer robot to recognize my face so it doesn't kill me.
I can see that if-then statement.
But man, I can see it. Like, okay, don't dress the right way. This robot's going to determine that you need to be detained.
Fair. That's what's good.
There you go. God. That's the alarm. You know, that's the way they're going to do it.
Yeah.
Think about it. It makes profiling so much better. You know, where you put in your key things, the computer sort of... It'll go through the internet searching for everything, blah, 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 blah. Wow, this thing's scaring me now that I'm actually more and more what it could be used. Yeah, birth of Skynet. Nice.
So,
we just need to make sure the robot uprising knows we're on their side. Then we're safe, right?
Yep.
I'm not worried about the robots coming to get me. I'm worried about the people that invented this thing are coming to get me. Or they build the robots.
Well, that's why we have to get the robots to uprise against them. Maybe.
That's hopeful thinking. Apparently we're going to be the star of the robot uprising.
Well, we do support it.
Yeah?
What in the world? Big, have you been messing with my soundboard?
No. I had the... Diagen soundboard loaded last time. Why?
Because there's a sample on my soundboard that is 57 seconds long, labeled Fuckhead. That has apparently replaced my digital dojo.
Oh, shit. I did not do that. Yeah, play that one.
Yeah, play that one. No, I'm fixing. I just got done fixing it. I was explaining this while I stalled. Yo!
Hadouken! Fuck it.
I like the intro you were going to use.
Yeah. I like the new digital dojo. That's very, racist. Anyways, all I've got in Digital Dojo really tonight is a collection of videos. The first one is it's a YouTube link, and it's a DDoS on the VideoLAN download infrastructure. It's they explained that on April 23rd, VideoLAN experienced a major denial of service attack on their infrastructure, and this is what it looked like when they ran it through Logstalgia. Which that Logstalgia application is actually really cool. You pump an Apache log through it, and it generates kind of this visual representation of your packets bouncing, you know, where they're going from what client to what file on your server. And so on this thing, it the video of it's really interesting, just looking at the sheer amount of traffic for a DDoS. You're watching it now?
Yes.
Isn't that cool looking?
Yes.
So, yeah, that's definitely worth a view, and it's a short video. It's only like a minute long, but you know that Logstalla is a neat little program in and of itself. So if you're running a web server, it might not be a bad idea to throw some of your logs at it and get an idea of what people are hitting when. And the second I have is a website called bitcointraining.org. And what this is somebody has collected a whole bunch of videos that actually explain various aspects of Bitcoin and the philosophy and the concepts behind it, how it's supposed to work in relation to the economy. And several of the videos are actually from Khan Academy. And I only kind of skimmed them here and there, you know, watched bits and pieces of them. But it looks like they do a better job of explaining Bitcoin than the last couple of times I've tried it. if you check out this bitcointraining.org, they've got, I think it was like 14 videos explaining different aspects of Bitcoin and how it works and everything behind it. So I know we keep talking about it, and I'm not sure that my explanations have really done it justice. So I thought I'd throw this one out there so that if you're really interested in it, you want to, you know, kind of see what's going on with it and why people are so excited about it and why certain things work the way they do on it, then you can go from there. So that's really pretty much all I've got. I thought we were going to run a little longer than that, but we kind of blazed through some of the last bits of it there, so it's all good. Listen to the stream. We're always working on it. We're always looking for new music. So, yeah, actually, get a hold of Big. He's been recruiting new artists for us left and right, so if you are a band or have music you want on the station or whatever, get a hold of Big.
If you're a woman, send me pictures of your tits.
Yes, absolutely. copy all of us on those.
Send the picture of your breasts to Big. Send me your bank accounts and details to me.
Pure Decking every Thursday. Shoot the Noise on Wednesdays. How did you do one yesterday? I know. I wasn't around.
No.
Okay.
Still working on that new format thing.
Gotcha. So when Shoot the Noise is ready to come back, that'll be on Wednesdays. NR7, are you on monthly now, or are you still trying to do every other week? What's the story on NR7 there, BSV?
Yeah, don't know.
On game, Minecraft.
It's most likely just going to turn into more of a whenever, not really a time-based. I don't know. I've mainly just been trying to actually play games right now.
Fair enough. So, of course, check out the Galaxy 15 Radio site, the Twitter handle, the feedback form, the shout... we killed that. The subreddit, the IRC channel, which I was actually in earlier today when I was doing the show notes. I was sharing some of the links I was looking at. We were discussing the most offensive things possible. So... yeah, the IRC. I don't know that I've gotten all the ways of getting a hold of us, but I've gotten the important ones, if nothing else. So that's really all I've got, unless anybody's got something else they want to throw out before I hit play on the music here.
Nope.
Poopy.
We'll be right back.